In April 1942, 24-year-old Lale Eisenberg arrived at Auschwitz with other Slovak Jews, immediately confronted with the infamous slogan, Arbeit macht frei, work will make you free. Stripped of possessions, shaved bald, and tattooed with number 32407, Lale made a silent vow that would sustain him. I will live to leave this place. I will walk out a free man. His multilingual abilities, Slovak, German, Russian, French, Hungarian, and Yiddish, quickly distinguished him from other prisoners. When the camp's tattooist mysteriously disappeared, Lale was appointed as the new Tattelierer, granting him special privileges, better rations, private quarters, and relative protection. Someone has to do it, Pepin told Lale when offering him the tattooist position, words that would echo in his conscience for years. When Lale expressed deep moral concern about defiling hundreds of innocent people, Pepin confronted him with the stark reality. He'd be a Nazi puppet regardless of his role. Each number Lale tattooed felt like a personal betrayal, yet refusing meant death. Was he a collaborator or a survivor using his position to help others? What's remarkable is how Lale transformed this morally compromised position into a platform for resistance. He built an intricate network of aid, smuggling extra food to prisoners and trading jewels from murdered Jews for supplies. He navigated the complex social hierarchy, building strategic relationships with guards while never forgetting they were his captors. Lale's life changed forever when he tattooed prisoner 34902's arm. As their eyes met during this grim task, his heart seemed to stop and restart. He had found his reason to survive. The woman, Gita, became his anchor in Auschwitz. They crafted a careful courtship, meeting secretly on Sundays behind the administration building. Lale brought her contraband goods, stolen bread, chocolate, even a diamond ring from his dangerous bartering operations. Their love became an act of defiance against dehumanization. When Gita contracted typhus, Lale risked everything for medicine. When he was later imprisoned for smuggling, she orchestrated his release through her connections. Their relationship transcended mere survival. They saw each other as complete human beings, not just numbers, making their love the ultimate resistance against the camp's brutality. As tattooists, Lale's mobility between camps enabled him to establish a vital trading network. His partnership with civilian bricklayers Victor and Yuri began when Victor offered him sausage, teaching his hesitant son about compassion. If we can help just one of you, we'll do it. Lale then collaborated with women from Canada, the sorting rooms for confiscated belongings, who would hide valuables in snow-buried rags, which he traded with Victor for food and supplies. This operation revealed the complex social ecosystems within the camps, where prisoners created networks of exchange and support. Small acts became resistance, memorizing numbers to reunite families, passing messages between camps, speaking words of hope in multiple languages. Lale's survival became an act of defiance against the Nazi regime. When caught and sent to Block 11 for torture, he found unexpected mercy from Yakub, a prisoner-turned-torturer who staged brutal-looking beatings while protecting Lale from having to betray others. While Lale's story forms the narrative backbone, some of the most compelling figures are the women who navigated Auschwitz's particularly brutal conditions for female prisoners. 16-year-old Silke Klein's beauty became both her curse and unlikely tool for survival as the unwilling plaything of Birkenau's senior commandant. Though initially portrayed as a victim, Silke leveraged her horrific position to help others, secretly passing extra food to starving prisoners and providing crucial information about selections. Her most significant act came when she arranged Lale's release from punishment by asking Schwarzhuber for her first ever favor, knowing the terrible personal cost. Gita herself demonstrated remarkable resilience through her network with friends Dana and Ivana. When Gita fell ill with typhus, these women risked their lives to hide her during the day among clothes in Canada, bringing her back only for roll call. They shared their meager rations and took turns watching over her. Women created intricate systems of mutual aid, developing communication networks through laundry and work details, sharing food, creating makeshift medical supplies, and providing emotional support. these micro-communities became crucial survival mechanisms, with women teaching newcomers the unwritten rules and maintaining small acts of dignity despite their circumstances. As Russian forces approached in January 1945, the camp changed dramatically. Transport slowed and damaged crematoria went unrepaired. In a heartbreaking moment, Gita was marched out with thousands of women while Lale remained behind. As she was forced through the gates, Gita shouted back, "Gita Furman," finally revealing her full name as both a farewell and a promise. Their paths to freedom diverged. Gita and her friends escaped during a march, finding refuge with Polish families before reaching Russian protection. Lale was moved to Mauthausen camp, then to Sauerwerke in Vienna, where he concealed his Jewish identity. On April 23, 1945, exactly 3 years after arriving at Auschwitz, he escaped by swimming across a river under gunfire. After liberation, Lale searched tirelessly for Gita, spending 2 weeks at the Bratislava train station questioning every woman about her. Just before he planned to register her with the Red Cross, Gita spotted him in his cart on the main street. Their reunion was perfect. Lale dropped to his knees, and Gita knelt before him, declaring her love. Lale and Gita married in October 1945, establishing a successful fabric business in Bratislava. Their support of Israel led to Lale's arrest by communist authorities in 1948, prompting their escape through Europe to Sydney in 1949. In Melbourne, they built another thriving textile business, with Gita designing European-influenced Australian fashion. After years of hoping, they welcomed their son Gary in 1961. Their home became known for its warmth and Gita's endless hospitality, her kitchen always filled with traditional European dishes for family and friends. Auschwitz's influence remained. Gita continued collecting four-leaf clovers, a habit born from trading them for extra rations. When their business later faced collapse, she sang while packing, telling Gary that after Auschwitz, financial losses held no fear. Their 50-year marriage demonstrated love's endurance beyond trauma. The tattooist story transcends typical Holocaust narratives by examining survival's moral complexities and humanity's capacity for connection amid horror. Their love represented defiance against systematic dehumanization. As Holocaust survivors diminish, such personal narratives become vital for remembrance. Lale's motto, "If you wake up in the morning, it is a good day," offers enduring wisdom about gratitude and resilience, showing how the human spirit can find purpose even in darkness.